Hi, it's Diane. It is noon on Tuesday, December 15th, and it's the Ides of December. That's just so funny that my brain thought that, but it's the middle of December, and I'm here. We've got Anne, Carrie, Sydney, Lisa, and Margot so far, and let's start with celebrations and check-ins. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. This is Lisa.
Go for it.
The celebration, I guess, as well. My son's doing pretty good in school, so I'm really excited. He was, like, sick all week last week, and he had a math test that was, like, over 2 days, and he missed it. So he had to make it up, and yesterday was his first day back. And I was kind of like, because he didn't really study for it or anything except for 2 weeks ago. And he went, and he took it, and he got, like, one wrong, so... The way they graded it is so funny. They call it like a 3. So anyway, and then he was embarrassed, like he was afraid I was going to like, you know, hoot and holler. So I tried to tone it down a bit. But so I'm really happy for him and the stuff he's bringing home. He's doing better in school. So
when
always
feels good
when they've got those.
Yeah, it's always good when they've got those kind of positive things that happen. And I'm glad that you're celebrating and it and. It's almost awesome that he, you know, he's like, he doesn't want you to hoop and holler. And so it's that tells me that you're celebrating a lot in front of him, which you'll figure out either it's motivating or it's not, and you'll manage that.
Mm.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it's good when we celebrate it because they get lots of chances to not do so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Who's next?
I'll go next. This is Ann. When you said that about not hooting and hollering, I thought of my son, who he marched in a parade on Sunday and got to walk with a puppy. It was a Christmas parade, and he's in the Future Farmers of America, so he was on the float. And I didn't go watch the parade because I didn't know what time it was, and he didn't know what time it was, But he said, I'm glad you weren't there because I was afraid you'd jump up and down and wave at me or something. But
no, hilarious.
He is really blossoming this year. He's a senior, and he's very involved in social activities at school, which is a good thing, I think, for him. So he got
that
to go
awesome.
In the parade. That's our success, our celebration.
Awesome. Great. Sydney, Carrie, Margo, who wants to go next?
Sure, this is Sydney. This is a celebration with also kind of just an acknowledgement of a challenge, but my son started middle school. We started in seventh grade, and he really was doing awesome. Like, he did great the first quarter. The second quarter, everything was going along. He manages his own studying, his own calendar, just his homework, and really is doing great academically, and so that was just fabulous to see. And at the same time, over the last 3 weeks, he had like 3 significant long-term projects that were, you know, projects and research and presentation and writing and much bigger than stuff he's done in the past. And what we found is as he got, you know, closer to the end, he definitely had not seen the big picture as well as he needed to, and we had to kind of jump in and help him a little bit after his first kind of failed attempt where he didn't want us to be involved. And now he's working on, so we learned that he needed some assistance there. But the reason it's still a success is he's now working on sort of this fourth big project that's due in a couple of days, and he's been willing to kind of step back and let us, you know, help him earlier in the process to make sure he's seeing the big picture and working towards what the real goal is. And I have no doubt that as next quarter comes and even the quarter after that, that with a little adjustment and help, that he'll get those skills. So I feel really, really positive, even though he's, you know, had this, you know, hiccup, so to speak, but I was expecting more of it going into middle school. And I guess it's nice that this has really been the first one, and I think it makes total sense.
Awesome. So what would you attribute, you know, if you could say one thing that made more difference than anything else, what would you point to?
I think with his first project where he wouldn't even let us look at it, which by and large we honor with him. Like, we don't overly micromanage him, because that's his personality and we've worked with him for years. But I think, and then he really did get a bad grade. And he doesn't want that. I mean, he does do well academically and he wants to do well. And so, granted, we were further along when he let us kind of take a peek, like right at the ninth hour, at the other assignments. And so it was pretty much a heroic effort to get the stuff in. But I think he could see that he didn't do as well on his own, that he needs the assistance. And he probably wouldn't have got there had he not gone on a day first.
Well, and I think that's always such a hard thing to do. And I can't tell you how many times parents ask me, well, should I let them experience the natural consequences? Should I not? What should I do? And I think that, you know, sometimes when you have some safe opportunities, quote unquote, safe opportunities to let your kid stumble a little bit, it can really make a difference.
Yeah, I agree. And particularly,
and even if you find that you may find out that the cause and effect works, and you may find out that the cause and effect doesn't work, which both would be very valuable sorts of things.
Right. And with him being such a strong personality, it's just the right, it's the right thing for him. He's got to kind of experience the consequences of his choices to be willing to be more flexible.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Carrie, Margo.
I don't really have a celebration. We've had a rough week. I guess the celebration is I'm meeting with her counselor this morning to try and go over ways to help her.
Okay. That's great. Well, when we, is there something you want to summarize, Carrie, about what's been going on outside of the celebration?
She's really missing quite a few assignments, and it was like over the weekend the teachers hadn't put it up, and then I found it last night at like 10 o'clock at night, where she's got like four F's in one class and a couple in another class, and it's just it's really frustrating because I feel like, you know, we try and provide all these environments and reminders and structure, and she tells me something's done and it's not. So,
and it's hard. And I actually, I personally am going through the same thing right now. But it can be unnerving because our kids, when they're teens, they sometimes they even do really well for a little while, and then they don't. And so it's hard to know how much scaffolding to put in place and when to scaffold and when not to scaffold. And it can be really frustrating when you think they've got it, and so you let them have a little bit more rope, and then the rope breaks, and they're like, "Nope, I don't have it." And so, you know, the good news is that you're close enough to it that you can jump in and you can, you know, work with a school and figure out, is it accommodations? Is it, you know, what is it that she most needs in terms of help and support at this point? But I'm sure it's a really hard place to be in.
Yeah, We're struggling right now.
Yeah. Sorry. Margo, how are things going for you?
Well, kind of the same situation. The end of the course finals or whatever they call them. And, you know, trying to just be available and ask questions that help him remember what's coming up and what he needs to do for it, and the results are not showing that he has put forth the effort that he needs to. So he's capable, he's just not doing it.
Well, and again, it gets to the can't or won't, and when we talk a lot about that in terms of the shifting expectations. And so, you know, the question is what do you need to do to figure out how to engage him in a different way? And I think hopefully today's topic will be a good one for you, but it's so hard. I would just encourage you to continue to kind of look at the perspective that you're carrying and say, you know, every time I use the word can't, or every time I use the word won't,
to go, okay, is it really completely true that it's won't, or is it completely true that it's can't, or is it someplace in the middle, and so I need to make sure that I'm wearing my compassion hat periodically. Does that resonate?
Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I guess, it's, you know, he's capable, so it's not that he can't. I don't know that it's that he won't.
So here's, hang on a second. So if he does, you say he can. So does he do it on his own 9 days out of 10?
Well, it's not something that can be measured that way. There's so much flexibility to new variables.
So I guess the question is, so if we're taking aim, we're taking aim specifically on his ability to capture and complete and turn in assignments, is that right, or is it something different?
Yeah, it's mostly that.
So on every day, 9 times out of 10, is he able to independently capture, complete, and turn in assignments?
I think so.
He does it?
Yeah.
All the time. So he's just, there's just a few times that he doesn't do it.
Well, there's not an assignment due every day, so it's hard to say.
So let's look at the days. So and I'm pushing on this because I want to use this as an example for everybody else too, because it's hard. It's a hard situation to be in. On the days that he has assignments.
We're doing it
too. Yeah. So on the days that he has assignments, is he able to, without any help from you or any help from the teacher, be able to capture an assignment, get an assignment done, and complete assignment and turn it in?
I guess my honest answer is I don't know.
Well, and I think that that's fair, because here's the thing, is that our kids can do it sometimes, and they can do it sometimes because they're motivated or their brain is particularly focused or, you know, the stars are aligned. But if your child's not doing something 9 times out of 10 and he's not saying, I really want to and I'm committed to doing this, which most of our kids are not old enough to do yet, there is some aspect of can't in there. The reality is that our kids have executive function challenges, and those executive function challenges impact absolutely every aspect of their life, period. So if your kid has a hard time, if your kid's not turning in his homework, it's, yes, there may be some element of, you know, I don't care enough to kind of put a process in place. But our kids have executive function deficits, which means that it's hard for them to just turn stuff in. And even if they can sometimes, it doesn't always help us to say, well, they can do it sometimes, because then we just get frustrated when they don't, as opposed to, I have a kid who the majority of the time has a hard time doing this stuff independently. How can I help him to learn how to do it more independently instead of getting frustrated when they can't? And there's that subtle difference there that, you know, it's the goes back to the naughty versus neurological. And usually it's a yes and. It's never all naughty. It's never all neurological, usually, I mean, when we're talking about our kids. But if you're looking at the situation and it's frustrating you and it's triggering you, and that's what we're going to talk about today, then being willing to consider another perspective, which is, wow, this is really hard for my kid for whatever reason. How can I help him, as opposed to being frustrated? It might open the door up to problem solving in a different way. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So that you guys got like a lesson before a lesson. How's that? So I want to step in like really quickly and just go back through and take aim. So, Anne, where are you taking aim?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I need to listen to the trigger talk a bit first, because it's probably partly triggers.
So what situation, can you, when you think of all the situations in your life, which one tends to get your goat or set you off more than others?
Uh,
Well, it's still a challenge communicating with my son about homework assignments and classwork and, you know, just how are you doing kind of questions. He just thinks I'm being too intrusive if I ask anything at all. Yeah.
Communicating about school particularly, but I think that's a great place for you to continue to play game. Carrie, what about you?
I hope that I'm taking aim by meeting with a counselor, and, you know, I'm trying to educate myself about, you know, if a 504 plan would be beneficial to her, and we're talking about a guided study hall for her, so I'm hoping that we're taking aim there. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me interrupt you for a second. So we want to take aim on the challenge rather than the solution. So what I heard you say earlier was the challenge is that she's got a lot of missing assignments and she's struggling with those. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that where you want to take aim, is on the missing assignments?
Yeah, I guess that would be a short-term goal.
Well, and again, we're taking aim for the next couple weeks, and so it may be that the strategy that you put in place is a longer-term solution, but if you're very clear that the problem you're trying to solve immediately is, you know, how do I tackle this missing assignments? My guess is that if she hadn't had these missing assignments, you wouldn't be meeting with a counselor. Is that fair?
No, I set the meeting up last week.
Oh, did you? Okay. All right. Yeah, so then is there a better place to take aim?
What you said about capture, complete, and turn in assignment, that to me resonates a lot. Like, I just feel like she's not doing any of those really with much consistency. So I would like to take aim with that.
Well, and so here's the challenge, Carrie, and I'm going to let you slide because I haven't had this conversation with you before, but there's actually about 12 different steps to homework. You know, when we really break it down, and there's a really great worksheet that we did that talks about the 12 steps and gives you some ideas and strategies and interventions for each. But as you dig in on this, I'm going to challenge you to figure out where the breakdown is. And Bella's at an age, and I did this with my son when he was, you know, I think eighth, ninth, 10th grade, where we sat down and we looked at the steps of homework, and we went class by class by class and said, okay, in Mr. Smith's class, is it more about knowing what he assigns? Is it more about getting it done because it's too overwhelming? Is it more about turning it in? You know, or whatever those 12 steps are. We went through class by class because for your kids, you know, most of us have high school kids. They've got 7 teachers that all assign differently, that all record differently, that all ask for, you know, and so it may be different in science than it is in math for her. And so that's why you're going to, so that's part of why you're taking aim. You might be taking aim right now, Carrie, on figuring out where are the breakdowns for her in the homework process and helping her figure out where is it breaking down. Is it about capturing everything? Is it about remembering the books? Is it about getting, you know, initiating and getting started at night? Is it about following through because it gets boring? Is it, you know, that there's so many different pieces to this. So, I'm going to write down missing assignments as kind of a placeholder, but you can tell that there's several steps that go in there, and you can figure out kind of at the end what you want to do in terms of action. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Sydney. Oops, do you have us on mute, Sydney?
Sorry, I was muted. I want to take aim on triggers for me in the morning, and I'm sure for me I'm just sure it's related to control, so somehow it's related to letting go.
Okay, so triggers for you in the morning is where you're going to take aim. So when you get curious, you're going to understand. So that's the next step after we take aim, right, is we educate, and you're getting curious already, which I love. Is kind of like, what is it that really triggers me? When do I get triggered? That sort of stuff. We'll talk about trigger journals in a minute, but I think that's great. Okay, who do I have left? Lisa.
Okay, hi. Maybe you can help me to kind of break it down. I want to take aim on, we're going to be traveling with my boyfriend and his son that's 1 year older. To go on a ski trip, And I don't want there to be any problems. So I don't know how to like break it down to something much simpler.
Is there often conflict in the car when you're in the car on long trips? Is it
conflict.
But go ahead.
There's conflict between the two boys. We're going to be together for, you know, a pretty good amount of time traveling and.
In-car conflict is a good place to take aim.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that sounds good, but I'm just thinking about also like restaurants and hotel and, you know, the whole thing.
Why don't you think about the car and then use that as an environment first, and then once you kind of have gotten curious there and have kind of figured out a strategy or something like that, then you might go, okay, how is it different in a restaurant or how is it different in a hotel or something like that once you've nailed it? Does that resonate for you?
Sure.
Okay. Margo, where are you taking aim?
Back to the assignments, communicating about them honestly. I'm going to look at 12 steps of homework.
Okay, so what do you mean by communicate with them about them honestly?
Well, I want him to be honest with me about them. So I need to learn the multiple steps and see if I can figure out where his breakdown is or have that conversation with him.
So I would say that the honesty around the homework is a great place to take aim, and it's independent from the 12 steps, really, because in fact, I just wrote a blog for another website talking about, and there's quite a few good articles on kids and lying, and kind of this article was three reasons your honest kid is lying to you. And it, you know, just talks about some of the challenges that our kids have with being, you know, with honesty, the way we would see honesty, and what kind of may or may not be behind those situations when our kids are less than truthful. And so I'm going to encourage you to take aim there, because I think it is an important step to create an environment where your kid can talk to you about what their challenges are with getting the homework done, right? So can they sit down with you and go through the 12 steps of homework and talk about what's going on in each class in an open and honest way without feeling like you're going to judge them, without feeling like they're going to get in trouble, without feeling like, you know, whatever it is that's kind of getting in their way. And it may be that they just don't even know, which happens a lot of times, is they don't realize that it's breaking down. You know, I hear my son say on a regular basis, he had no clue that his teacher assigned something. It just literally, he was not present enough in the moment the assignment was made to be able to capture it, which is a reality. So does that resonate for you to start with honesty in communication about homework?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So everybody's got their taking aim, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of you. And we're going to talk about triggers today. Triggers is my thing, I got to tell you, because I'm a recovering yeller. I don't know if you guys know that about me. Elaine and I talk a lot about kind of the different avatars and how parents tend to show up. And I tend to show up like Sue the Supermom. And then when I get overwhelmed, I go to Angry Anne, because my default is fight. Some other people's default is flight. So you may be a mom that hides in her closet when things get rough. You may be a mom that goes toe-to-toe with her kid when things get rough, but that's the fight or flight. And so, you know, what we're talking about here is managing triggers. And we're looping back around. We talked about the four critical response areas, and triggers actually is part of activating the brain, because what happens when we get triggered is that the problem-solving part of our brain actually shuts down, And so, you know, our ability to problem solve, our ability to move situations forward, or our kids' ability to problem solve or move things forward really is diminished. And it's important to know that if your kid is triggered and you've got a kid with ADHD, that's even harder for them, because that part of the brain where we problem solve is the part where the executive function is. And so our kids already have deficits in that area. And so if on top of it they get triggered and that part of their brain shuts down completely, it's literally impossible for them to engage with us in problem solving. So managing triggers becomes job number one in families where triggers are an issue. And it doesn't happen in all families. And sometimes it's mom or dad that's getting triggered. Sometimes it's the kid that's getting triggered. But regardless, it's really critical and important to identify and manage these. What we're going to talk a little bit about, there's really four things that you can do. We have a step that's called, escaping the threat cycle. And I don't think this is in the workbook, but I'm going to add this in here. But, the first thing is to acknowledge and understand your triggers, right? So you've got to know what triggers you. You've got to know what triggers your kid. You've got to pay attention to that and really uncover it. So I've got parents who do trigger journals for their kids so that they're kind of walking around, and at the end of the day they're going, wow, my kid had a meltdown about X, Y, and Z, and they're writing it down and starting to do some curiosity around, well, what might be triggering them, or when might be triggering them, or, are they hungry? There's a thing in 12-step programs. It's hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And all of those things tend to make us more sensitive, which make us more apt to be triggered. And so knowing what your own triggers are is important. Knowing what your kids' triggers are is important. And also kind of understanding what's underneath it. So for example, one of the things that used to trigger me a lot was going into the online system at school. And I knew that it triggered me because it's like I was terrified that I'd see another F that I didn't expect and I'd get a surprise. And it's like I didn't have any control. But it really was about control, right? Because I knew it was a situation that I couldn't control. I can't get my kids great. I guess I could do all my kids' homework for them if I wanted to. But it was one of those sort of, if I'd just done X, Y, and Z, then this wouldn't have happened. And you kind of feel like this loss of control. And it would trigger me. And so I would, I got to the point where I'd have my kids look in the online system for me, because then I didn't have to look. I have to worry about getting triggered. But so it's really about understanding, what is it that's triggering you? And so that's step number one, is understanding your triggers. Step number two is about reclaiming your brain. And, it's really important to get back in that problem-solving mode. We cannot parent effectively when we are triggered. And I say this all the time, but it's almost like one of those repeat-after-me moments. I cannot parent, I can't parent well when I'm triggered, because you're not problem-solving. You are in search or destroy mode. That's what you're going to do. You're going to fight or you're going to flight, and that's all your brain is going to do in that moment. So you do need to take a minute, and if it's a deep breath, that's important. If it's a sip of water is really very calming to the brain. And I always joke, because, we talk about amygdala hijack being that time when your brain gets sucked back into that primal place when you go into fight or flight. And so if you take a sip of water, the animal in your brain goes, oh, I'm at a watering hole, all is well. Water just tends to calm the brain down. It may be that, if you do meditation, or if you do, just emotion management, mindfulness, those sorts of things, is the second step to reclaiming your brain. The third step is really finding a way to look at the situation differently. So if your kid has pushed your button, let's say they are snarky with you and you're like, oh my gosh, this kid is so disrespectful. I can't believe this. This is terrible. This can't happen. And I'm going to stop this. Right. So that does that sound familiar to anybody?
Yeah.
No? Nobody's got disrespectful kids? No. So, it's like, so I'm thinking, oh my gosh, my kids are so disrespectful. I must have been a bad mom because I've got these disrespectful kids, or how dare they, or whatever the thought is. I take a few deep breaths and I go, okay, It's not that my kids are bad. It's not that my kids are disrespectful. My kids are having a hard time showing respect in this moment. Either it's because they're triggered or they're stressed or something else is going on for them. But in this moment, it's hard for them. And so if I think about the fact that, you know, instead of they're bad kids or they're disrespectful, even if I can just get to, well, they're having a hard time being respectful for this moment, and there could be lots of reasons that that's going on, I can go back to problem solve, which is how can I help my kids to recognize what it is that's going on right now and be more respectful. So I had the perfect example this morning. My daughter was just being really, really rude to me in the car. And, you know, my first reaction was, don't talk to me like that. That's not okay. But then I realized there's something going on with her. And so I was able to get to curiosity and took a few deep breaths and got to curiosity. And she's like, and I said, what's going on? It's not like you to be so disrespectful in your communications. And she said, I'm really stressed out right now. This is the last week of school and I got finals and I'm sorry. You know, but it was because we were able to have that conversation, and she and I obviously have a lot of these conversations, and you may not, but, you know, we were able to have that conversation in a different way. Instead of me going, don't talk to me that way, go to your room, it was, what's going on? It's not, you know, I know you don't want to be disrespectful in your communication. So, and then once I did that, once I was able to think about it differently, I was able to act differently. And that's really what we want to be able to do in managing our triggers, is we want to be able to act differently so that we don't get triggered again. So know your triggers, reclaim your brain, choose a different perspective, or, you know, look at it differently, and then move forward. So that's my little speech on triggers. What do you guys think?
That makes sense. The disrespect one, we've kind of gotten over that because they used to be able to be disrespectful and that would get me off track. So I'd listen to the disrespect and then the other topic would go, you know, would become minor because I'd deal with the disrespect. And so, you know, after a couple times I caught them looking at each other and smiling like, oh, we got her again, you know, I decided to change. My reaction. So,
What did you notice when you changed your reaction, Anne?
Well, they learned over, you know, probably a week or two that the disrespect was going to be ignored and we were going to stick to the topic. And so the disrespect got less and less and it's pretty much gone away now.
Cool. Other thoughts?
I think I'm going to have a hard time figuring out what my triggers are.
Sorry, whose voice is that? I got not recognize it. Margo.
Sorry,
okay.
Margo.
So, Margo, what could you do that would help you to notice your triggers more readily?
I don't know, you know, mindfulness through the day. I'm more apt to retreat than to fight.
Okay.
So I guess being conscious that I am retreating and then figure out what it is that's just been happening.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you've got a particular retreat, so it's kind of like if you notice, a lot of times it becomes such a habit. Either the fight or the flight becomes such a habit, we aren't even aware that it's happening anymore. And so, you know, whether it's a routine that you do, so it's like when you notice you're retreating, maybe you go to a particular spot in the house and you write a word down, or, you know, you've got something that you do that kind of helps you to remember, oh, I'm in retreat mode. What happened just before that? Or maybe at the end of the day, you go, what did I notice today? And maybe your brain can remember it, and maybe that it can't, but just getting into some sort of routine where you become more conscious of your triggers can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are there thoughts?
This is Sydney. Your whole example resonated with me, and I was on mute, so I couldn't say anything. But
my son and I are similar. I think we're both strong personalities and probably controlling and not so flexible. And so where I get triggered is usually when he's triggered. And it's not every time, because obviously I work on this, but his trigger is kind of upsetting to my system, you know.
Okay, so can I interrupt you for a second?
Yes.
Okay, so you want to dig in on this, Sydney? Because I think this would be a good example. Okay.
Sure.
So in that moment, he's triggered and it starts to impact you. So what is it, what's the voice in your head tell you at that moment when you see that you've got a triggered kid?
Usually, because there's different reasons, but when you said you want to stop it, shut it down, that's what I want. Like, it's just upsetting to my energetic self. And so he's, like, upset about something, wanting to control something, bigger than life about something, talking on and on and on, and I just want to
shut
it down.
So is it that you don't want to be around an upset person? Is it that you want to help your son who's in pain? What's really the voice in your head?
The voice in my head is I'm rolling my eyes and thinking, just let it go. Like, it's not that big a deal.
It's like, you've got to be kidding me. Why is this bugging you? You're taking this so personally. Why is this?
Yeah, he's at a 10 on something that's a 1.
Yeah, and he's overreacting. And so what if he's at a 10, Cindy? What's the impact of him being at a 10?
Usually it involves him getting into a conflict with his sister, and he's trying to kind of control her.
Right. So is it that when he gets escalated like that, everything has to stop? And so if there's homework going on or there's something going on, it's like, oh, here we go again. I've got to get involved. I can't believe this is happening. He's overreacting.
Yeah, it's the mornings. So I'm specifically thinking of the mornings.
Okay.
So my daughter has a really hard time being on task. She's also ADHD. And so getting her going and moving and done is, you know, there's a lot of steps in that. And so he gets in her space and then starts controlling her, and it becomes this huge hubbub. And then in the meantime, she's not getting ready. And I'm listening to all this conflict. And literally it's 3 seconds for them being in the same room.
Mm-hmm. So can you see, so if you had to bottom line why it bugs you so much that it happens, what do you think you would react? What would be your reaction?
It upsets my emotional system to have all that conflict going on. It's just, I'm
sensitive. Yeah, you have a hard time being in a conflict. So what does it say about you if there's conflict in your life?
I know where you're going with this, and I don't think it's so much what does it say about me. Honestly, I'm just super sensitive, and so it's as if, you know, now all of my cells are on pins and needles, and it's the morning, and I'm just waking up, and
I can't handle this. I've got to get out of here. This can't happen. I'm going to shut it down right now. Okay.
Well, I often will just plug my ears, because if I can't hear it, but then it's like, how long do I want to sit there? It's like, I'll keep unplugging my ears, hoping it's done, and it's not, you know?
Yeah. So if that's the case, and you know that one of your triggers is mourning, so the question is there something, is it about prevention or is it about management? And if you know that the conflict is pretty frequent, you would approach it via prevention. If you knew that the conflict was not very frequent, but might happen, you might handle it with management. And so I think that you know, it's kind of really looking at what do you need to do to prepare yourself of the reality of conflict for your kids. Is it a mantra that you need to give yourself? Do you need to do a little bit of meditation before you're exposing yourself to your kids? Do you need to separate your kids so that they're not in the same space in the morning? I actually now take my kids one at a time to school because it was easier than dealing with the conflict between them. It was less convenient for me, but it really did make a difference because I only have one of them in the car at the same time. And but, you know, it's kind of like, what is it that you do in that moment? Because, you know, is it about, you know, reassuring yourself when when chaos happens that you can handle this and protecting yourself energetically when it happens? Or is it about doing some prevention, Sydney?
Right. Probably both. I've been working on the protecting myself energetically by just sort of visualizing the person I want to be, which is more kind of zen, and plugging my ears. And it's actually going pretty well, but I think I do need to get in there more and talk. And I started talking to my son about this today, but about separating them. And by and large, they are, but I mean, I actually have them in totally separate spaces, but he is in the space that she occupies first, and he's been in there and in there and in there forever. And it's like, he's got to get out. So
yeah.
I think,
well, and there,
I just
there's there's another tool that's kind of come into me, Sydney, as you're saying this, and this it's got so many different shapes and forms. Everybody can kind of listen to it and take what they think might apply to them. But I've heard it described like putting yourself in a bubble. You know, so it's like if you know that you're going to have to maneuver in a very difficult, precarious environment, if you kind of put yourself in a bubble and say, I'm protecting myself from this. Yes, this is going on around me, but it's not impacting me, and I can be completely calm and peaceful in the middle of this. You know, I'm in my little balloon. I'm picture yourself in a white balloon, or picture yourself however you want to, kind of like you said, the picture of yourself being really zen. But the reality is that if we don't focus on the conflict, then we're less apt to get sucked into the conflict. And sometimes it resolves itself,
right,
and sometimes it allows it to be separate. But if you know that one of your triggers is conflict, then, and you know that your kids are prone to conflict, the solution is not necessarily stopping them from arguing. The solution is about figuring out how to be in a different way with them arguing. So maybe it's, how can I help them to stay calm in the morning? Or how can I trust that even if they have conflict that I'm going to be okay? You know,
right.
Some other thought. Go ahead.
Sorry. Well, as you're saying that, because at first, because I've been working more on the protecting myself energetically and like just today I was thinking more about separating the kids a little bit more. But then as you're talking, I realized probably it really is about me having a hard time with this conflict because of my energetic sensitivity and my controlling everybody so that I feel okay is what drives me nuts about my son, because he's also very sensitive. And so I'm just realizing I need to work more with not getting sucked in. So not, you know, the solution is me, not them as much.
Yeah. Well, and if we were working on this, and I'm going to move on, Sydney, but you know, if we were going to work on this a little bit more, you know, I'd ask you a question like, you know, how could having conflict be of help to them? You know, how is it that they're learning from, you know, the conflict that they're having? Or how is it that conflict is helping them in the mornings? I think a lot of times, I don't know if I've said this to this group, but the ADD brain in the morning really needs stimulation. Same thing kind of at the end of the day. It's when those meds have worn off or our energy is down. And adrenaline is a really great ADD medication. And there are lots of ADDers that pick fights in the morning just to wake up because it's so hard to transition from sleep to waking. And it could be that your kids are doing it just to get going in the morning. And it doesn't mean it's any fun for you because it kind of stinks. But it might not be, and it may be because they're trying to create their own identities. I mean, they're teenagers. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons that it could be normally going on.
Right.
I think you're wise to kind of think about how do you handle it differently as opposed to trying to stop it, which gets us back into that search and destroy mode.
Right.
So let me hear from other folks. Anybody else? What are your thoughts around triggers and your own triggers, your kids' triggers?
Morning is a trigger definitely for me, and I've solved it by keeping them separated in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's because I think that they should be able to get along, you know, and they should be able to eat at the table and have breakfast in the same space. It doesn't work that way. So
yeah, I was going to say, then, Anne, is that a realistic expectation?
Absolutely not.
Well, and that's great. Well, it's a beautiful, wonderful wish, and someday my heart for you is that someday they can. And at the same time, don't make yourself crazy having an expectation that may or may not be realistic. In the meantime.
Right. Yeah, I know it's not realistic, but as long as one is out the door before the other one appears in the main part of the house, we're okay.
And sometimes those are the best strategies. You never know. Anybody else?
When you talked about, like, one of your triggers was looking at the online school stuff, that resonated to me. And also just talking about her homework and, like, trying to get to a point where I say, well, what homework do you have? And she can never answer the question. So I know that that's a trigger for me.
So when you ask her that question and she answers, I don't know, Mom, or I can't tell you, Mom, what's the voice in your head say, Carrie?
The PG version is, why don't you?
Keep going, sorry.
Yeah. No, there's several four-letter words that are running through my mind at that point. Yeah, it's why can't you do this?
So what's the answer? What's the answer, Carrie? Why can't she do it?
Because she has ADHD, I guess.
She has ADHD and she has executive function challenges, and she does not have the supports and the structures she needs to help her brain work effectively. And that's why you're here, because you're learning them so that you can help teach them to her.
Yeah.
And she'll develop them as she grows and matures. But, you know, it's kind of like every time, you know, you find yourself saying, why can't she ... right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the question to answer yourself, to calm yourself with the answer. That's like, because it's hard for her, or because she's got ADHD, or because her brain works differently, or because, you know, whatever it is, it's that shifting to that disability perspective can often be a way to decrease the intensity of the trigger. How does that resonate for you, Carrie?
Yeah, no, that I think that would help.
Anybody relate to what Carrie just shared, including expletives, probably?
Yep.
Other thoughts? Lisa, I want to hear about you and the car conflict. What do you notice about the triggers for the guys in the car, if you get curious?
Hi. So, you know, just listening and thinking about a lot of the things and how, you know, like when you're talking about conflict and talking about, like, prevention versus management. So, you know, because this is it's been going on off and on for, like, over a year with my boyfriend and, well, his son and my son, who were 1 year apart, and his son, who does not have ADHD but who has other issues, and who I think likes to, probably just like all children, this is what people tell me, because I just have this one child, likes to push my son's buttons, and he knows exactly how to do it and how to trigger him. And then my son is the one that ends up getting in trouble. And but then other times they get along beautifully. So I don't know, like, just thinking about prevention, like talking to my son. But the thing of it is that definitely he's triggered, you know, in the morning, and more so at night when he's tired or when he's hungry. So, you know, and with traveling, that's kind of hard. I mean, I guess I can, you know, have prevention by, you know, letting him, like, watch a movie. Him taking his medication is definitely prevention. And also keeping him fed. But the thing of it is that, I don't know, maybe also some prevention might be my boyfriend talking to his son ahead of time about not triggering my son, because I see it. So, but then the other part of me is like, maybe we shouldn't travel together. Then none of this will happen.
Well, so we kind of use the model. So it's like, you know, is it a realistic expectation that they can be in such close quarters without having conflict? That's question number one. Yeah. So what's the realistic expectation? Number two is, you know, what's the positive, you know, how do you, if you were going to focus on the relationship, how would you do some of these prevention sorts of things? And I think the other thing is, you know, is there a motivation for them to not have conflict? And clearly there's for you guys, you would rather not have the conflict. There's, you know, it may be that it may be that for you, for them, there's not that motivation to not have conflict.
Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that maybe we should give them some motivation to not have conflict?
Well, do they have, so what is their motivation to not have conflict?
I don't know. Xbox One?
No, but I mean, no, I'm saying what is, so without you changing anything, is there motivation for them to not have conflict?
Well, I think, you know, on my son's side, I think there is more than on his son's side, because my son, you know, he really wants this, him to like him. So I think there is some motivation on my son's part. On I don't think he really cares.
Yeah. Well, and so, and then as you got curious, it's kind of like they're bored, there's nothing to do. That, you know, it's interesting and exciting to push somebody else's buttons because it's, you know, you get a rise out of them. I mean, so you can, it makes perfect sense why it's happening. And so, again, that takes you back to what's the realistic expectation and what's their motivation for not letting it happen. And so it may be that you say, okay, if you guys can make it all the way to, you know, I don't know where you're going, all the way to San Francisco without killing each other, then, you know, what reward could we give you, you know, and work with them to come up with some kind of, and I think that this is, those guys are old enough that you could sit down and problem solve and say, look, you guys might be having fun fighting in the back seat, but it's really uncomfortable for us, and so we'd like it to not happen. What do you think we could all do about it, or what do you think you could do about it, depending on kind of how empowered you think they are. So what stands out for you in that?
Well, you know, just realizing, that it really isn't a realistic expectation to expect no conflict at all. So it's just that, you know, I just kind of feel like for me, like the, what is it? You know, it's just like if we, you know, continue to have conflict, then I'm afraid that we won't be able to continue to go on trips together. Because we've already made some major life adjustments because of the conflict that occurs with everybody else's interpersonal relationships around my son. So I guess I feel like I have, there's a lot at stake with them getting along, and so I feel a lot of fear around even trying to make it work at all. And like it might go beautifully, but you know, I'm kind of afraid to even take that chance.
Well, I'm going to loop back to you in a minute, but you know, as you think about this, it's kind of like figure out what does that mean in terms of what you want to do, what you want to commit to in terms of action. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So we're getting close here. Let's ask our questions and do a wrap up here. And I would love to hear from everybody kind of as we close. The first one is, what did I focus on or pay most attention to? Somebody tell me what page we're on again, so everybody can be there with a question.
26.
Thanks, Anne. Okay, so what did I pay attention to? What did I most focus on? What became clear? What aha did I have, or ahas? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So take a minute, take a few notes, and I would love to hear at least an aha from everybody and a commitment for action.
And aha, this is Carrie, and aha for me was, you know, I know you've said it many times, but I guess it just was again today, that it's not that she doesn't want to do these things or she's actively rebelling, it's just that she can't behave like I expect her to behave. And a step that I want to take is to look at the 12 steps of homework you mentioned, and to go through each class with Ella and kind of figure out where things are breaking down. And in order to do that, I just need to set aside some time to do that with her, hopefully uninterrupted.
Yeah. Yeah. How realistic does that feel for you?
On a scale of 1 to 10, probably a 7. 10 being completely realistic. I think that, you know, we're just crunched for time, but I think we don't have anything going on tonight, this evening, so hopefully we can get some of that done tonight.
Well, and I know this is a challenge for you, Carrie, because you guys are so uber busy, and this is why taking aim becomes so important, and it's hard to not be impatient because you're at a point where you've made this commitment to getting some support and you want it to be fixed tomorrow. And I want to just remind everybody, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And it's the more we think about it being something that needs to be fixed as opposed to something that needs to be managed over time and grown and developed, I think it helps us to keep the triggers under control. Because if we think that it should be able to be, you know, we notice that moment where it's like, we've got to fix this now, that's when we get into search and destroy mode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who else?
This is Sydney. I had several takeaways today, or sort of ahas, but one is the focusing on me, finding more ways to protect myself energetically versus controlling or shutting down the situation. And then your question, you know, how could conflict be of value to them? And how is that helping them activate the brain? I see that in spades, not just with my son, but really also with my daughter. And to see if there might be some other more productive ways to activate the brain in the morning, even if it's like physical movement or something. I don't know, but I can see that maybe even more for my daughter, that's actually really a big part of what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. So specifically, what would you do about it then?
Well, I need to be really finding more and more layers of ways to protect myself energetically. You know, I've already been working on that, but I need to continue that, and they need to be, you know, healthy ways. and so I'm mindful of that too. And then second, probably just getting curious with my kids, like with my daughter, you know, or just trying some things out like humor or physical movement. You know, one of the things I've been doing is kind of tickling her to get her up in the morning. That was one of your guys' suggestions, because she has a hard time, and that has worked really well. And she'll even say, like, I do this little thing on her back, it's a little poem thing. And she'll like, oh, do that, you know. And so it's just a way to take something that's negative and turn it into a positive just by approaching it differently, but it's still activating her. And I'm just not always aware that that's really what's lacking.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, who else?
Something that stuck in my brain when we started, you said that when we're triggered that our executive function shuts down. And so that really fits for me, because I am in the flight mode, you know, I'm shutting down in a lot of different ways. So the realistic action step is the observation, the curiosity, notice my patterns and figure out what's going on.
Awesome. Love that. Okay. Who haven't I heard from? Who did I miss? Did I talk to Margo? Did you check out yet?
Yep. That was me.
Oh, that was, oh, sorry. I'm like mixing voices up. Who didn't check out?
Anne didn't check out.
Okay.
Well, I think escaping the threat cycle was very useful for me today. And I need to pay attention more to what my triggers are. And I've discovered a couple of them, and that's just because my boys exchange glances, you know, and I realize, oh, you know, then I realize what's happening. So I need to
work on figuring out what my triggers are before they give themselves away.
Well, and that's the thing. Elaine always says, you know, it's like our kids pushing somebody's buttons is, you know, it's a pretty normal thing that we do when we get close to people, for a lot of different reasons. And kids, you know, kids tend to go for the jugular. And if you've got a weakness, it's like they're going to do what they can to, you know, to exploit it. And it's a great opportunity for us to work on our triggers. So, cool. Okay, did I get everybody now? Did anybody not check out? Awesome. So this is our last call until next year. So we are going to be together again the January 5th. Yep, January 5th. So there is not a Lifeline call. So we're going to actually have 2 weeks off because of the two holidays in the middle. But we will be back on January 5th, and you know, we will be on the forum in the interim. So if you guys need anything, post it there and tag us and let us know. And have a great, great holiday for those of you who celebrate Christmas. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody. And we'll talk to you next year.
Thanks, Diane. Have a great holiday. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye. The moderator has left the conference.